going to go to Memphis right now. Coming up later on, we have interesting news about breaking the speed of light. Man, you got to be kidding me with that, bud, right?
No, I said the man went faster than light.
The man went faster than light. I got to hear this one. Margaret Gray joins us from Graceland in the gift shop there, right, Margaret?
So right now, yes. I am in the gift shop here at Graceland, and I've been talking to an awful lot of people who obviously are very excited about being here at Graceland, one of the greatest singers in the history of popular music, Elvis Presley. What's your name?
Jim Dean.
Jim Dean. And Jim, where are you from?
I'm from Bogalusa, Louisiana.
And are you enjoying being here?
Oh, it's wonderful. We've got, I've seen everything, and I brought my guitar. And I just wanted to have Elvis sign it. I know he's dead, but every year I brought it.
Jim has brought his guitar here every year, Phil. Even though he knows the king is no longer with us, he still holds out hope that maybe Elvis will sign his guitar. But you know he's not.
Yeah, no, I know he's a guy. But it's just a tradition.
You bring it there, sir, knowing that he isn't going to sign it.
Yeah, it's just a tradition. I go, maybe this year he'll sign my guitar.
And what is your name?
My name is Susan.
And Susan, where are you from?
I'm from Los Angeles, but I work in New York now.
And I understand you're a famous person.
Well, my last name is Estrich.
Are you Susan Estrich on Fox News?
Yes, I am. And I was just on this afternoon with Sean Hannity, and now I'm here, and I'm really having a great, great time.
Can I ask you a question? Because, you know, you look lovely, Susan.
Thank you.
Did you have your nose done, or did you do?
You know, I don't want to answer that question, but
I know you did have some work done, didn't you?
You know what? I don't want to answer. You got a real pair on you.
Susan Estrich, Phil, I know for a fact she's had work done. I think they brought in a municipal crew on her face. Honest to God.
All right, well, look at, that's the lady, huh?
Yes, that's Susan. She's over right now. Susan,
now get lost.
All right.
Well, let's talk about your relationship, Margaret, with Elvis Presley, because I understand that it was an interesting one.
Phil, it was a very interesting relationship with Elvis Presley, and tonight on your program, I want to let people in on a little secret, and I'd like to get into that secret by singing this song. As the snow flies on a cold and gray Chicago morning, a poor little baby child is born in the ghetto, in the ghetto. And his mama cries. Do you recognize that song, Phil?
I do. It's In the Ghetto by Elvis.
Well, Elvis sung it and made a hit record out of it, Phil. But I am telling you and your audience tonight that I wrote that. I wrote those lyrics.
You wrote In the Ghetto.
I wrote In the Ghetto for Elvis in 1972. I was a 22-year-old young woman, starstruck. I had met Elvis Presley at the NBC special that he did in 1968 when I was just an 18-year-old girl. And I fell immediately in love, as everyone does when they meet the king. Now,
In the Ghetto was never a song that anyone attributed to you, Margaret. I believe the writer was a man named Scott Davis, who wrote a lot of songs.
That is a pseudonym that I took.
But what about the other Scott Davis songs?
There was another Scott Davis, yes. But I took his name to write that song for Elvis Presley. And I remember I was with Elvis one night. We were at the Sands Hotel, and he had been on stage performing. We went back to the lounge bar, and a number of people were there. Howard Cosell was there. I remember not only Howard Cosell, but one of the members of Three Dog Night, Chuck Negron.
Chuck Negron, you mean?
I'm sorry, yes, Chuck Negron. And one of the other members from the Grassroots. I forget his name now, Bobby Smith, I don't know. But in any event, I said to Elvis, I said, I've got a song. And you know, he says, well, let me hear it. And I said, well, here it is. I said, can I sing it for you? And he said, yes, please. As the snow flies On a cold and gray Chicago morning, a poor little baby is born in the ghetto. And his mama cries, 'cause if there's one thing that she don't need, it's another brat to feed in the ghetto. Now, Phil, you notice I wrote brat.
Yeah, the word is another hungry mouth.
No, I know. Elvis wanted me to change that. And the reason why I wrote that, I was writing it from a woman's perspective.
Okay. Margaret, I want to ask you, because this is not something that is known, I don't think, to anyone musicologically or in any other way, that you were the author of that song.
No, I wrote the words. The music had already been written by the real Scott Davis. But I went ahead and took his name for the lyrics.
Oh, so the melody was there.
The melody was there. And Elvis had this melody, and he kept saying to me, you know, I just don't know. You know, the way he says it. He'd say, you know, I don't know. Margaret, I got to tell you, Margaret, I'm really a... And I said, well, what? He said, la-da-da-da-da, do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do, you know how the song goes.
Yeah.
And so I said, well, let me work on it. And the next morning I came downstairs. Now, I did say, because if there's one thing that she don't need, it's another screaming brat to feed in the ghetto. And Elvis thought that was harsh. He wanted that change. So I said, all right, a hungry mouth.
Another screaming brat. Boy, that's, you know what I'm saying?
Well, again, it was written from a woman's perspective.
All right.
Let me see. Where are you? And then I wrote, people, don't you understand? The child needs a helping hand, or he'll grow to be an angry young man someday. Take a look at you and me. Are we too blind to see? Do we simply turn our heads and buy some more drugs, is what I wrote. And Elvis said, well, I don't want that. And I said, well, what? He said, how about, and look the other way.
So the original lyric was, do we simply turn our heads and buy more drugs?
Yes. And Elvis...
Now, why would you have... So your song was decidedly more gritty, I guess.
Yeah, that's a very good word, Phil. It was gritty, it was tough. And I said to Elvis, I said, you know, darling, you don't... You're singing about the ghetto, but do you know those people? And he said, you know, well, I'll tell you, Margaret, you know. I said, you know, it's another screaming brat. And really all they want to do with the money is go out and cop.
You know, and do what?
And cop.
Cop means buy drugs?
Yes. It was honest. It had street mentality, really. And then the lyric went, and his hunger burns, so he starts to roam the streets at night like a filthy animal to fight and steal in the ghetto. Now, I eliminated filthy animal because Elvis didn't insist, and he just learns how to steal and fight in the ghetto. But these were minor changes. And then there was another one that Elvis felt, and Phil, understand who I was at the time. I was a young, stupid girl. At the very end, I wrote, and her young man dies, and good riddance to trash, for the white man rules in the ghetto. And I know that that is...
You didn't write that.
Yes, I did. And Elvis said, well, that will never, ever fly. And I said, well, I really believe good riddance to the scum, and that's how I felt then. I don't anymore, Phil. Elvis taught me. And
did you wrote and good riddance to scum because the white man rules in the ghetto?
Yes, I did, Phil, but please understand my age, the times. The times were...
But it was 1972, and people couldn't be more hippied out. Everybody was hippied up.
Well, I don't know what you're talking about, because I remember it to be a time of it was the golden age of George Lincoln Rockwell. And it...
No, it wasn't. No, the Nazis? No, it wasn't.
Well, in any event, Elvis said to me, I love it. Margaret, I love it, and I want to do the song. So I said, and I said it very coy, I said, well, what do I get, you know? And he winked, he nodded. Yeah, we had the understanding, I knew, that we would be closer.
Well, are we talking about sex, or?
No, we are not talking. Phil, Elvis taught me how to love. But he held his love back. And it frustrated me then, but I've learned since to appreciate that. He taught me how to love. I took all that stuff about white people ruling the ghetto out, and the young man dies, but good riddance to trash, because the white man rules in the ghetto. I thought it was a very good lyric. He didn't like it. So I said when I came back to Graceland that night, not that night, but a week later, I said, I'm Margaret Gray, and they wouldn't let me in. I said, would you please tell Elvis that I'm here? And they said, well, Elvis isn't here. And I said, you know what? I don't believe you. I think you're liars. And they escorted me off the grounds.
Okay.
So I decided that I had to go in a disguise. Now, I knew that he was managed by Colonel Parker. I had never met Colonel Parker. I went down to one of the costume stores in Memphis, and I'm thinking, well, I don't know what Colonel Parker let me.
Now, wait a minute. Are you trying to get in disguise?
Because Elvis was expecting me, and they told me, well, he's not there. His Memphis mafia was very protective. Scotty, Skeeter, Red, Butch, all those guys were very, very protective of Elvis. And so I thought, oh, God. I knew how those guys were. And I said, Scotty, it's me. It's Margaret. Come on. You know, we sang around the piano. He said, oh, I don't know, man. You know, he was trying to protect his job. So I said, I get it. So I go down. Well, a block away from Graceland is a costume store, and it's called something like Dixie Costumes or the Confederate Costume Company, something like that. And I went and I said, okay, Colonel Tom Parker, what does he look like?
So you were going to dress as Colonel Tom Parker to get in?
Well, I had to, because these goons that Elvis hired hated me. Scooter and Red and I don't know what their names were. They all, you know, this Margaret, you know. So I bought a string tie, a white jacket, one of those white, you know, hats that I thought, I don't know, Burl Ives would wear, something like that. I got a black mustache, and I said, hi, I'm Colonel Tom Parker, at the door, and they said, okay, come on in. So that's the kind of stupid things.
But wait a minute. Are you telling me that you got past the goons, Elvis's mafia, dressed like Colonel Sanders?
No, Colonel Parker.
Well, what you're describing to me is a Colonel Sanders costume with a mustache and a string tie.
Well, I don't know. It fooled the idiots that Elvis ate, fooled those rednecks he had working for him. So,
well, probably they let you through because it was a big gag.
Well, watch how you say gag, because later on that night...
All right, look at Margaret. I have to get breaking.
Well, I've got some more stories to tell you.
I understand that. I have to tell you, Margaret, I appreciate you being on the show. We do have a phone call. I can't get to it. That you telling me that you wrote in the ghetto is something I'm going to have to verify.
Well, you go right ahead and verify it, Phil. I think that's very rude. I'm on your program.
I don't want to be rude, but you're telling me that the last line was, and good riddance to trash because the white man rules in the ghetto. And
Elvis didn't want it in, and they didn't put it in. Why are you making an issue out of that? I came on your program in good faith. And for you to question my veracity, I think is very rude, very rude. And
I'm sorry. I don't mean to question it. I just never heard. We're going to get to a caller here when we come back on the Phil Henry Show. So will you hang around with me, Margaret?
Well, I'll hang around, but I really think you need to rethink some of the things you say to me, including the intimation that I'm some kind of slut. That was...
Well, you're the one that said, speaking a gag.
I apologize for that.
All right, hold the line here for just a minute. Margaret Gray joins us on The Phil Henry Show. She claims she is the real author of the lyrics in the ghetto, the lyrics to the song In the Ghetto. We'll be back with your phone calls coming up, 1-800-449-8255, Phil Henry Show. Never forever, what I think
is true. Phil Henry.
Joining us on the air from Memphis, Tennessee is Margaret Gray. Miss Gray is talking to us about the song In the Ghetto, which was a song that she is claiming, and I'm not trying to question your honesty, that you claim you wrote the lyrics to that song. Margaret, you there?
Yes, I'm here, Phil, and I really think that we need to... I'm looking at some bald-headed man. Oh, I know this man at the Bunny Ranch in Vegas. Yeah, that's Dennis Hoff. I know him. I am...
Can you just pay attention?
No, I know. No, I wrote In the Ghetto, Phil. I wrote it lyrically in 1971. I was trying to write a real street-level song about what it's like being black, yes, but also being white and having to deal with the ghetto. But Elvis changed a lot of those lyrics.
Well, I think a lot of them, good thing he did. Don't you agree?
In retrospect, yes, I do, Phil, absolutely.
Margaret Gray, who claims she wrote the lyrics to The Ghetto. Let's go to Steve, listening to us on KRCN in Denver. Steve, how you doing?
I'm doing very good, and we're enjoying your program in Denver very much, sir.
Thank you. And your question?
I would like to ask your guest a question about the In the Ghetto song. I'm very, very, very questioning all of the honesty of it.
Steve, can I say something to you? I performed it as slam poetry in beatnik clubs.
In where?
In beatnik clubs. A lot of beatnik clubs in Los Angeles, they would have these slam poetry nights.
I'm not familiar with any kind of any of those, but I'm saying that Scott Davis wrote that song.
Well, she's claiming she took Scott Davis's name.
Well, what does that mean? What does that mean?
It means I took his name.
Yeah, but he says he wrote the music to it.
He did write the music.
And also it says words and music by Scott Davis. Now,
yes, words by Scott Davis and music by Scott Davis.
No, it says words and music by Scott Davis.
Yes.
Well, see, Steve's got a good point because it intimates that one man named Scott Davis wrote...
No, it does not. The both of you, you know, look, I don't know how much... Are you in the entertainment business, Mr. Bozell?
Ma'am, that's not the point of whether I'm in the entertainment business. Mr. Henry just backed me up on it. Words and music by Scott Davis makes the idea that one man wrote it. And you...
No, it doesn't. It says that Scott Davis wrote the words and the music. But which Scott Davis wrote which?
That's the stupidest thing. Mr. Henry, can I?
Well, I'm not here to be called stupid by some. You know, I defended you in this song. I tried to put a spin on it so that the white race was represented, and for some cracker to.
Ma'am, I'm not a.
We don't have to get into these names, okay?
Well, I'm very sorry,
ma'am. I'm not a cracker, and I'm not a white man. I'm not a black man. I consider myself to be just a man, and.
Well, it's lucky for you that you can make that assumption, because not all people can.
What? What does that mean?
What does that mean, Margaret?
Don't worry about it. Not everyone can be as cavalier.
Well, all I'm saying is, I'm saying that I'm a very big Elvis fan.
As am I.
Let the man finish, okay?
I'm sorry.
I'm a very big, thank you, Mr. Henry.
You're welcome.
I'm a very big Elvis fan. I've loved Elvis from the first time I heard his song, and I'm also a member of the Elvis Impersonators of America. I have performed my Elvis impersonation act on stage in Las Vegas many times.
What's your stage name?
My stage name is Elvis Presley. What's my stage name? That's a hot one. God, you... I think that, you know...
Well, no, not every Elvis impersonator calls himself Elvis Presley. A lot of them call themselves, you know... Elvis number two or Purple Elvis?
No, I just go by Elvis Presley, and everybody knows that I'm fake. you know what you should have wrote in that In the Ghetto is, and there's a woman named Margaret who needs to get her lazy ass out of my bed because she's worthless trash in the ghetto.
All right, I told you not to call names either, Mr. Bozell.
Well, all of it.
You know what? I'm not offended, Phil. So you do your Elvis act, huh?
Yeah, I do.
Do a lot of people come see it?
Yes, they do, ma'am.
Well, go ahead. Do us a song.
I'd be more than happy to. I don't have my guitar or anything like that. So I guess you're going to complain about that, huh?
No, I'd love to hear it.
Go ahead, Steve. Can you sing an Elvis song?
Are you kidding me? I know all of them, and I know them very well. And I don't claim that I wrote any of them, and I didn't do it as slam poetry in some beatnik club or God. That's so wrong for you to say that.
Well, Mr. Bozell, do your impersonation.
We'd love to hear it. I really would.
So you can laugh at it.
No, I'm not going to laugh at it.
Yeah, bullcrap.
Well, just do it.
I'd like to hear If you think you're as good as me, I wrote an Elvis song.
You didn't write no Elvis song.
Yes, I did. I want to hear you sing one.
All right, here. I get out on stage and I have on the white karate suit, my wife took some pajama bottoms and she dyed them, and I have boots.
Oh, God.
Oh, see, right now. Okay.
Just hold your comment.
Mystery train going down my track. Ouch. I'm caught in my zipper.
Oh, brother.
Phil Hendry. Go to talkradionetwork.com for more information. The Phil Hendry Show.
Well, as we mentioned in our last segment, Bobby and Steve Dooley join us from the Western Estates Homeowners Association. And we are going to talk about this MoveOn.org ad, which is obviously a serious, and I can hear the music there, Ms. Dooley. Is that?
Yeah, this is Native American spiritual music. It speaks of the day when our people can return to the hunting grounds that we knew. And it's really, I think it speaks to all people. It isn't just for Native Americans, but I believe the music is for all of us because we all want to return to our hunting grounds and worship our great spirit.
So there's a commonality.
It is, yes. There's a commonality in culture. There really isn't any difference between the Native people and those of us who are opposed to the war in Iraq and who want to save the environment, and certainly those of us who are opposed to offshore drilling. We think that... I'm sorry, what?
I got to use the product. What's going on with
Phil, can you hold on for me? I'm awfully sorry. My husband's going out to the store. We want to get up early in the morning, and we're going to... The boys have soccer practice, and I'm the snack bomb. So can you hold the line for a minute?
Yeah, I do have a time constraint.
Well, I'm the snack bomb, and I've got Steve's going off to get the snacks. Just hold on.
All right. While we're waiting for Ms. Dooley, we'll tell you that she is, as I said, a member of an organization called Angels on Our Shoulders, which is a anti-war organization of concerned mothers. And they are going to. She is on the program here this evening to respond to the criticism that the MoveOn.org ad has received concerning the lady who says, "You know, John McCain, you can't have my son." Did you tell her, Bud, that we are under a time constraint?
Yeah, I told her everything, and she still doesn't care.
Well, I'm not saying she doesn't care. I'm saying that she probably feels that we have more time than we actually have. So, can we get moving on this thing? And I don't know what's going on here.
That's Native American.
I know it's Native American music. It's in my ear. So if you can tell her that I'm... I think this is her coming back.
Yeah, get the Swizzlers. I'm so sorry, Phil. I apologize. But Steve didn't know where the keys to the Suburban were. And what I was speaking about...
All right, but that's okay, but we are under a time constraint.
What I was speaking about is that there is no difference between... myself and an Indian that wants to return to his hunting ground, because we want to return to a peaceful country and a country that is concerned more with the environment and everything.
All right, can we talk about the MoveOn.org ad?
Yes, well, that's my main concern here this evening, Phil.
All right, you feel that it's been lampooned and that people are missing the point.
Absolutely, Phil. The MoveOn.org ad is talking about motherhood and what it is to be a mother. We are lions, Phil. All mothers are lions. We protect our children with violence, if need be. We protect our children as a mother... tigress would protect her cubs, or as a mother bear would protect her cubs, or as a mother dog would protect the cub, or the
puppies.
The puppies or the cubs, yeah, you can call them either one.
At least that's my understanding, because Jim Gessler, who's one of our neighbors, is a zoo. I can never pronounce it, but he's a zoo person. He's a zoo man.
Zoologist.
I'm sorry?
Is he a zoologist?
Yes, that's it. He's a zoologist. We are very, very... And talk to any mother about her child going off to fight a war for George Bush or John McCain, and you better step aside. There's an old saying, don't get between a dog and its meat, because you will get hurt. And I mean that quite literally. And I think the point that was made was this in the MoveOn.org ad. John McCain, if you think that you're going to take our children and you're going to feed them into some kind of a war blender or a wood chipper I'm sorry to use that kind of terminology.
Well, you're accusing John McCain of wanting to intentionally slaughter children.
If John McCain thinks he's going to feed our children, Phil, into that wood chipper that he calls the Iraq War, well, you want to know something? He may be able to convince a lot of people in the Senate. And he may be able to convince Cindy. Okay? But when you start putting your hands on my sons, and I have three of them, and they're all in high school, by God, may God have mercy on your soul. And that is the point of the MoveOn.org ad, and that is what I'm trying to say through Angels on Our Shoulders.
Let's talk a little bit about this image of a wood chipper. Do you really feel that this man wants to slaughter babies as if he's feeding them into a wood chipper?
Absolutely, Phil. Ask anyone who has fought this war for as long as we have. That is the thing that drives George Bush and John McCain more than anything. In fact, are you back?
Yeah, I got the Swizzler, and I also got the little Milky Way bars.
All right. Steve, come on over here for a minute, honey. My husband, Steve, helped produce a radio ad that we are going to be airing on a variety of radio stations, Phil, from Angels on Our Shoulders. And it was, the announcer is me, Steve produced it. And we try to make the point about John McCain and the bloodbath that he so gleefully awaits sending our children swimming into. Steve?
Yeah, and this is important, Mr. Arnold, the wood chipper.
What, do you use a wood chipper image?
I didn't hear that, Phil. What?
Do you use the wood chipper image?
Well, just hold on. But listen to this ad. In fact, let's do it live, Steve. Do you have the sound effects?
Yeah, yeah, that's right over here.
John McCain, I'm a mother, and this is the sound of my baby. But what do you want to do with my baby? You want to feed my baby into your war wood chipper. And when my baby comes out of the war wood chipper, what am I going to want to do? You got it. And what do I do with what's left of my baby? Never again will my baby go. No, what I will hear instead is... And then... Paid for by Angels on Our Shoulders. Now that is real...
Oh, come on.
No, no, hold on for a minute, Phil, because I know your feeling on this.
Wait a minute, okay? The ad...
That, Phil, I'm going to finish what I want to say. That is what is on the minds of millions of women.
What about baby Gino?
All right, I want to say something, if you don't mind.
Hold on, what, Steve?
What about the baby Gino, too?
Oh, the baby Gino ad is part two of the campaign. Now, MoveOn.org has promised us funding to try to get these on the air. Now, you wanted to make a point?
I think it's over the top, is all I'm saying. I think it is taking the war in Iraq and sort of Vietnamizing it to the point where it's this criminal, military-industrial criminal effort to use as fodder for the large war cannon American kids. I just think that imagery is a bit antiquated.
Well, I don't have any idea, Phil, what it is you're talking about. All I know is I'm a mother. And I'm the mother of three sons.
Baby Gino.
I'll do it, Steve.
I know you're the mother of three sons.
Can I play the baby Gino?
You can play the baby Chino. I don't know what that baby Chino is.
Well, let me get the baby Chino.
Well, but can I make an additional point, if you don't mind? There seems to be a belief that the attitude of McCain and Bush and those who support the war is this, the attitude of this kind of 1940s style war industrialists who get fat on the death of others. I just think it's erroneous.
Mm-hmm. Are you done?
Thank you very much for taking me seriously.
Are you done?
Yes, I'm done, Ms. Dooley.
And Phil, I listened to every word you said. But you're missing something. You're missing the very, very private thing that only a mother can feel. And that is the love of her children, Phil, and what we want them to become. I want my sons to become something. I don't want them to become what John McCain wants them to become. Do you understand the difference?
Well, you know, there is this, that they're going to be 18, so you really don't have anything to say about it.
Say that again?
I said they'll be 18, and they can join any army they want, and you won't have anything to say about it.
Not if I... Children are an investment, Phil, and we want some return on our investment.
Oh, well, that sounds very...
Oh, I get it. Do you think I missed... So I'm a big war industrialist? No. The return on the investment that I want is a peaceful world and a loving child. Now, this is a little bit different. We call this the baby Chino, and it is difficult to listen to, so I would alert your listeners, if you want to.
All right, this is difficult to listen to, folks.
Okay, Steve, you?
Yeah, I got the button.
My name is Bobby Dooley. I'm the mother of three boys that I love so deeply. I remembered when they were small children, but if John McCain has his way, he'll feed them into an espresso steam machine. Okay, now you, Steve.
One baby Chino coming up.
We've got a mocha soy baby Chino on the bar. Can you imagine your child being fed through that contraption and coming out nothing more than milky white foam? Why, it's enough to make you want to just... Paid for it by angels on our shoulders. Hello?
Yeah.
So it stuns you, doesn't it?
Yes, I'm stunned.
Well, do you have anything to say on...
I think it's almost humorous.
Oh, is that right? So a child... Oh, my God.
What did you say? Wait a minute.
Did you say you thought it was humorous?
Absolutely. I thought it was almost humorous.
What? Are you kidding me? God, what a warmonger.
Mr. Henry, do you have to parade your warmongering personality in front of everyone? Is that what you're doing?
Actually, no, but if that's what you think I'm doing, then that's fine, but I think it's almost humorous.
So feeding a child into a machine that pipes scalding hot steam and that then reduces the child, because of the heat, into nothing more than foam. So listen to this, Phil. This is a baby right here. You hear that?
Yes, I understand.
All right, this is the baby. Now, here's what's left of the baby. Oh, God.
Oh, my God.
See, that's what John McCain wants to do. And then naturally, when I see my baby come out as nothing more than a mocha baby Chino, I go...
What, you go to the bathroom?
No, that was the wrong one. Steve, that's the wrong one. I go... And then I...
And you think that's humorous? What a warmonger.
Yeah, I do. I think it's pretty humorous. A baby Chino. You don't think that's funny?
No, and I... My God, you're obviously not a parent.
I've been a parent.
No, you're obviously not a mother. Only a mother understands, I think, what it means when you hear this sound.
Well, what is that anyway? Is that,
Phil, that's an espresso machine.
Okay, it's an espresso machine. What does that mean?
There isn't a mother that goes into Starbucks that doesn't hear that and think, my God, my child. And then she turns, looks at herself, catches a quick glimpse of herself in the mirror at the door, but not because she's admiring what the stepmaster did to her rear end, no. She's just looking at herself and wondering how it is she could ever have given birth to a child. that she could ever, Phil, have given birth to a baby, only to know that someday John McCain would gleefully feed it into
a wood chipper.
Yeah, a wood chipper. And then no. Oh, God, there goes.
Yeah, Mr. Henry, can I make a point here?
What?
That's two babies. That's you. Put the one baby. There's the one baby that goes in, right?
This is one baby.
Now, here comes another baby. Right now. Okay, Bob, load in the other baby. Yeah, oh, boy.
That's what John McCain wants to do. So, now do you think it's funny, funny man?
Yes, I do. Yes, I do. I'm sorry, but I do.
Oh, my God. I you know what? I'd hate to be you right now.
Yeah, the mail you're going to get.
The mail you're going to... Listen, that's three babies right there. I want you to listen to this, Phil. This is very important.
All right, I do have to take a break.
Excuse me. This is very important.
Ms. Dooley, I have to take a break.
Mr. Hall.
Yes, David.
Why don't you let the lady make her point?
I got to take a break.
Let her make her point, then take your break.
Thank you, Mr. Hall. I appreciate it very much.
That's quite all right.
Phil, this is John McCain standing at a wood chipper wearing his hunting jacket and his mittens. There goes in the... All right, the baby goes in.
Now, you're saying this is a baby?
Right here. Now. Oh, God. There's one baby.
There's one baby.
So that's it. That's one or two? Well, actually, that's one. Now...
I get it.
Be quiet. Oh, God, I heard the other one.
Yeah, see?
Yeah, see, Phil?
Yeah, here comes another baby. There goes the third baby. John McCain feeding babies into the baby wood chipper.
No, well, yeah, that's the baby wood chipper. There's also the war toilet, which is... And then there's...
All right, thank you very much. We got a break. God. Phil Henry Show.
Phil Henry.
World famous Phil Henry Show. This is a story that wasn't in our Loon Alert, and some people may think that it belonged in the Loon Alert, but it doesn't. This guy is just a good old fashioned. He's just a good old fashioned psycho. Somehow slipped through the cracks. He's on death row. Maybe the guy should have been in a soft room in a mental bin someplace at a forensic hospital. The guy's name is Andre Thomas, and he ripped out. He pulled out his only good eye and ate it. Now, I don't know how I can put that any other way.
What do you mean, his only good eye?
He only had one good eye.
What about the other one?
You want to know?
No, he didn't.
You got it. He ate the other one back in 2004. Well, he didn't eat it, but he pulled it out. It's funky. Yes, I understand. There are people listening saying, why are you telling us this? This is a slice of life that you must hear about. Do you know what Kurosawa said?
I don't even know who he is. He's like a Japanese general.
A Japanese general. He was a filmmaker. He made Seven Samurai. He said, to be a true artist, you must never close your eyes.
That why the guy put his eye out?
I'm talking about, you got to hear, will you get out of here and quit asking me these questions?
You said he's supposed to close his eyes. He took them out.
I'm talking about us hearing about news like this. We must. We have to face life. This guy he's way off the beam, man. Way, way off. He's 25. He was arrested for the fatal stabbings of his estranged wife, their young son, and her 13-month-old daughter in March 2004. Okay, there. Then, I didn't tell you the details. Their hearts had been ripped out. He was convicted and condemned for the infant's murder. I don't know how that works. How did that, the 13-month-old deserved? I don't know. Anyway, he was convicted and condemned for the infant's death. While in the Grayson County, maybe he thought he was wrongfully accused. Anyway, look at me trying to figure this guy out. While in the Grayson County Jail in Sherman, Thomas similarly had plucked out his right eye before his trial in 2004. A judge subsequently ruled he was competent to stand trial.
That can't be. That can't be. There's no way. I know there's a difference between, and I think we all need to understand, there's a difference between clinical insanity and legal insanity. There's a very big difference. You can be declared legally insane, all right? But you may be declared legally sane for acts that the rest of us would consider completely insane. Let's take, for example, the classic cases of serial killers. They commit crimes that are beyond the pale of anything that we would understand, and yet those guys, most of them, are legally sane because they know the difference between right and wrong. And they generally sit there and they listen to their counsel and they understand what's going on and this and that. This guy rips out his eye, then he eats the other one, and he's legally competent and he's going to go down for the count, huh? A death row officer at the Polensky unit in Texas, this is the Texas Department of Criminal Justice, found Thomas in his cell with blood on his face and had him taken to the unit infirmary. Thomas said he pulled out his eye and ingested it. Oh, God, man. Talk about, you know, I always wanted to work in a prison hospital, and now I know that's my calling.
Phil Hendry.